Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay, the word is out. They're going to talk about the VOD and the silver screen. Kevin and Tom and Joe know all there is to know, from masterpieces to deep fried tacos. Sucks, you might hear them say, there's no telling where the guys will take you. Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice, cause we already warned you. Better watch out, it's gonna ruin the plot. Real spoilers. Real spoilers. Real spoilers.
Broadcasting from the lush but not lavish studios located in the basement of the O'Keefe Institute for Advanced Film Snarkitude, this is Real Spoilers, episode 615, Save Yourselves, which has never been a more appropriate title than now. I feel like I need to clarify it's a film title. I'm not just making a recommendation. So,
right.
Let's go around the very brief virtual table to introduce ourselves.
This is Kevin.
This is Tom. Joe's out sick. Well, he's not sick. His kid is sick. We're recording this on Sunday, the day after Halloween. She's throwing up. No relation to Halloween candy. You would be a fool and a communist to think otherwise.
Yeah, don't even... Why would you even insinuate that?
No. No, not at all.
Kids so, don't like candy. And he's like, she's had three pieces. I'm like, that you've seen.
Right. I'm like, come on. You've been a parent long enough to know how this works.
He's Joe. He knows how this works.
Yeah. So I guess before we dig in, shameless plugs, don't forget we're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, iHeart, TuneIn, wherever you get your podcasts, you should be able to find us. If you don't,
I think we're on Spreaker now.
Oh, we are on Spreaker now, but are we still on Zune?
Oh,
that's the big question.
Let me check my Zune. It's in this drawer here. I'm sure it still has battery life.
So, and you can also find us on Facebook, facebook.com/realspoilers. While you're there, like the group or like the page, join the group, and you can also help us out. One of the easiest, simplest, cheapest things you can do to help us out is just share an episode with friends. People who were kind enough to share an episode this week: Chris Valls, Gabriel Lugo, Chris Sanders, Daniel Hill, Chris Williams, Librarian Cynthia, Aaron Marlowe, Tammy Sherman Powers, Travis Tewitt, Julianne Jordan, Heather Sachs, Ralph Tribble, Carl Clarkson, JD Duran from In Session Film, The Movie Journey Podcast, Mike and Oscar, Ronnie Castle, Colby Mack, Matt Naglia, Binge Movies, Chris from Chris's Movie Corner, Brad
Hyen. That was
Hyen.
A test.
Brad Hyen would have been so upset.
Could you imagine?
Yes. Oh, my goodness. So, four is a crowd. James from Geek to Me Radio, Aaron White from Feelin' Film, and Invasion of the Remake. So, thank you so much, guys, for sharing the episodes. We greatly appreciate it. And one last way you could help us out, if you have a little extra money in your portfolio, you can go to patreon.com/realspoilers, where for $5, you can get all sorts of bonus content, and you help us out, and that's greatly appreciated. Helps us buy equipment and things like that.
Well, if you're a tax-paying U.S. citizen, you got that stimulus check, so why wouldn't you have that?
They rushed you one right before the election, so you should be good to go there. Joe just put out a new episode for the Patreon, a Patreon exclusive with Learn from KC95, which is a station in town, but a legendary rock station in the country, and they were talking about The crow.
Caca.
Right.
Yeah.
And I was like waiting for one to be about Tom Servo. But no, they decided to start with the crow and then Gypsy, then Cambot. So anyway, there's all that. I guess you and I will dig into to the movie du jour, which is Save Yourselves. I had never heard of this movie until you were like, let's do this one. And I'm like, okay.
You know, it's so interesting, and in the time we're living, I mean, I guess interesting is the word for it, but the theatrical release schedule is so weird, as in they throw out a couple things here and there in theaters for the ones that are open, but not many, and then there's a lot of movies that are destined for theaters that they decided to try to make some dough on VOD and do that whole thing, like Bill and Ted and that. This is a movie that was at a film festival. It might have been Sundance, I think.
Yeah, was it Sundance?
Okay, and then it got picked up, and so it was supposed to be, you know, this year theatrically released, and it was also funded by Legion M, so that's the one that's financed by the fans, so you chip in money and you actually can become a producer type of deal. So it's like Kickstarter, but just for films.
Gotcha.
And,
well, if it's funded by fans, that explains the how large the cast is and how many sets they have. And
right.
The level of special effects.
But they're the ones that did Jay and Silent Bob reboot.
Okay.
Legion M produced that one
to
get that made. And Stan Lee documentary. There's a really good Alien documentary type film. So Legion M's been, I think this is like their fifth round of funding now. So they've done quite a few films. But anyway, so this was supposed to be theatrical.
Well, I will say it's interesting when you say it's like their fifth or sixth one. Like when you list off the other ones, this sounds like the first property that doesn't have a built-in fan base, right? Like the documentaries are like, oh, I like Stan Lee, I'll watch this Stan Lee documentary.
Right,
oh,
right.
I like Kevin Smith, I'll throw $20 at this Jay and Silent Bob reboot thing. Where this seems like the first one that's just a completely standalone property. Like there's no, the IP is brand new. There are no the actors, with all due respect, aren't names that I think people would know or have a huge fan base of their own, unless there's just something I completely missed, which I'm 50 now, that could be. So like it's interesting that they're branching out and taking risks on things that aren't kind of known quantities.
Sure. And so I will say it, I looked it up because I didn't want to give the wrong info. I didn't list them, but there are a few other ones. So it's not just those. Those are the ones that stood out, of course, because they're related
because
to
of those reasons. Yeah,
exactly. But they did Tolkien, the Nicholas Stahl.
Okay. But
film
still where people like Tolkien, right? Like
that's true. It's based on a Mandy, that crazy Nicolas Cage movie. Now that's original for sure.
Yeah. I have not seen that. I bought it when it was on sale for like $5, but I've not watched it yet.
Gotcha. And they did is Colossal the one with with Anne Hathaway? Did you ever hear that one? Colossal?
No, but I will also say they managed to get at least names for that. You know what I mean? People know Nicolas Cage, people obviously know Anne Hathaway, where the biggest name in this one is Amy Sedaris.
Right.
For like 4 minutes.
Right.
You know?
And so there's a couple other ones. I think the biggest, the only other real big one that has been recent was there was one with one of the Doctor Who guys, Bad Samaritan, which was, which one is that? Is it David Tennant, I think? And that was one that I think you may have mentioned, the show share James Enstall from Geek to Me Radio. Mm-hmm. He was talking it up a lot online. I never saw it, but he had seen it, and I think he may have even hosted the Legion M screening in town. Like, they'll do get-togethers for the local members that support the movies to go watch them on the big screen.
Yeah, yeah.
And he really enjoyed it. So I think it was one of those, like, kind of down-and-dirty little thrillers that reminded me of, like, I think it was like a Taken type type of film, the feel of it at least. So anyway, maybe check that out. But Legion M has made a little name for themselves. And
totally.
I know they sponsored the Malton on Movies podcast, so they're always talking about them.
I will say, even though I was kind of teasing this movie because of its lack of sets and special effects, like I mean, I could tell making it that they didn't have tons of money. But it didn't feel cheap or like not professionally made.
No.
You know what I mean? Like, you could tell that they had to do certain things, limit the number of sets, or, I think their creature choice, which we get into,
sure,
was, you know, that was an inexpensive way to do that. But it also worked for the quirky nature of the film. Like it,
they worked within their constraints very well.
Yeah, totally. So like I at no point was I like rolling my eyes at it. But as a film reviewer, I'm like I can kind of see why they've made some of the choices they've made, but the choices still worked within the narrative of the story.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yeah, I didn't know much about this either other than hearing it was picked up at Sundance. And I, you know, from the poster, from the couple clips that I saw going online, I just knew it would be something I'd like. I like those quirky little indie movies.
Yeah.
And I think I nailed it for myself, at least. I'm like, okay, this is a delightful movie. Just to get into the plot of it, the movie starts right off saying that the world has been lost. And so you're like, okay. And the main characters that you were talking about earlier, they're this couple, and they're like a millennial hipster.
They're like hipster, a hipster
type.
Couple, yeah.
Yeah, like early 30s. And I take it that they're not, like, he, I don't think, is employed. Am I right? Like, he doesn't have a job that I know of. Because she's kind of like, what do you do? You know, like, what are you?
Yeah.
Like, he's got Bitcoin or something. So I think he's trying to, like, he's trying to make money on these new age type ways without having like a real job. And she is an assistant to somebody, I think.
Yeah, she's like a personal assistant to somebody who you only ever really kind of get the vibe from when she's on the phone, but somebody who seems like a real bitch.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, they're just trying to make it, and they're hipster, like you said. Like, he's trying to make bread and do all these new agey type things. And you can just tell that they're one of these more new age couples. But the gist of this movie, the commentary on this movie, is clearly supposed to be a social commentary on people being more involved in technology and their phones. And I mean, it's a very relevant film and story because it's so relatable. I think we can all relate to it, even if it's not to so much of an extent at all times. But I mean, it's a very relatable film. And the fact that I thought it was very funny when they're on the couch and they're starting to make out, and then they start getting phone alerts.
Yeah.
and they go from they're about to get it on, and then he looks at the phone, and then she starts scrolling Facebook or whatever, and is like, so-and-so had a baby. And then they just go.
it's funny because I thought it was going to go where, like, she was going to get mad at him. Like, they were about to have sex, and then he gets distracted by her phone. But then she also gets distracted by her phone, and they're both just like, yeah, this is fine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so it's so funny because, I mean, I can't necessarily say that I've been in that particular situation. I mean, come on, you got to have your priorities. But there are still, obviously, we've all done that thing where we're scrolling on our phones and we're in the same room.
Sure.
And, or you check a message, whether you're out at dinner or something, and you shouldn't sit on your phone at dinner, but you get a message and you have to respond to it, and then the other person might do it, and then all of a
sudden
you realize
there's a lull in the conversation, you kind of reach for your phone.
Yeah.
Totally. I will also say this about this movie. Like, it handles their relationship masterfully in that you see a scene like that, but like you also know that like these two love each other. Like you never like in another movie, I think that would be like shorthand for this relationship is in danger. And it never plays like that. It always plays just like they've reached the point of the relationship where the hot and heavy is maybe over, but they still care for each other. And and even when they have their arguments in the movie, it never feels like an argument where it's like, oh, now here's the part where they break up and then they'll have to get back together. It's just a couple like not agreeing on something, and then that calms down and they kind of, but like I said, you always know that these two are on each other's side.
Yeah, it's. I agree 100%. What I thought was so refreshing about it was it did not fall into those tropes. And then they are very likable and very charismatic. So you've got Sunita Mani and John Paul Reynolds are the two actors that play Sue and Jack. And their chemistry is really good. They have a really, I mean, it was believable, their relationship. You really did feel that, like you said, all the time, that they cared about one another. And I also do like that the movie didn't go down that path of, you know, these issues are ones that are not, these are not the type of movie tropes that are like, oh, you did something bad, now I'm going to break up with you. The one person isn't cheating on the other one.
Yeah.
Or, you know, one person isn't too in their work so that they the other one feels neglected. It's never like that. And I think that is why it's so relatable. Like you said, when they get into fights, you're like, I've had that argument. Or, yeah. You know, they're very realistic feeling. You know, this was written and directed by two people. They're both Alex Houston Fisher and Eleanor Wilson are the writer and directors of the film. And kudos to them for writing such a believable script. I mean, for the few people that are involved in this film, it's really, I mean, the writer and directors and these two are the main crux of probably 85% of what you see on the screen.
Yeah, there's a couple, you know, different scenes in the, like, locations and extra people in the first, you know, 10 minutes of the movie. But basically, like, once they decide to go to the cabin and stay at the cabin, it's basically them in this cabin for, like you said, 80-85% of the film.
Yeah, and so they end up going to a wedding. That's the distraction on the couch when they were about to get it on is the groom is texting him and so they go to the wedding and they end up running into Rafe, who is like an old friend they haven't seen in a while, and he ends up telling them that it would be good for them to disconnect and get away, and he lets them use their family cabin. Is that?
Yeah, he has a cabin, like, I took it as, like, upstate New York, and so, yeah. You know, they can stay there for a week, and so they decide to use this as a way to disconnect, and that they're going to turn off their phones, and they're going to just engage with each other and nature for a week solid. And it kind of similar to, was it Jake Gyllenhaal that, like, he did something like that, and then, like, where he was, like, in the desert for a month, and, like, when came back up for air, it was post-COVID. Like, it was the end of March. And so the world was normal, and when he came out, everybody was, like, couldn't find toilet paper, and we were all going to die, and we're wearing face masks, and he was just like, what the holy hell happened?
Well, and I mean, geez, well, that is really relevant. I mean, this being, you know, the time that we live in, and with that having happened, you know, all
this
stuff.
Jared Leto, I think.
Actually. Oh, well,
sorry.
There you go.
So that's, my apologies to Jake Gyllenhaal.
You know what? When you said that, I was thinking it was Leto. He's one of those that would go out to the desert for a month and, you know.
Yeah.
So all this stuff is happening around them. And have you seen the movie Tucker and Dale vs. Evil?
Yeah, I've a couple times, actually. I just watched it like 2 weeks ago with my stepdaughter.
Isn't that a great movie?
It is. It's a lot of fun.
I love it. And so they're basically in a horror movie and they don't know it.
Right.
And not only
are they in a horror movie and don't know it, they're the villains and don't know it.
If you've never seen Tucker and Dale vs. Evil, it's Alan Tudyk. And is it the guy from, what was that TV show?
He was on Reaper, and he was on Invasion, the big sci-fi show that was supposed to be like the alien version of Lost. Which is actually pretty good, but they got a little too meandering with their storyline. But he's popped up in quite a few. He's one of those actors, Tyler
Hoechlin?
No.
I'll look it up. Yeah. We got the old, may as well, since I got
to the Googles.
But, the Google box here. Tyler Labine,
yeah. And so, to me, especially when he was younger, he reminded me of, like, he would be the little brother of Donald Logue, however you say it. And but yeah, he was one of those actors who, like, who's popped up on, like, some things that were supposed to be big and just didn't quite click for whatever reason. Like,
yeah.
he's always great. It's just he ends up in a lot of things that just don't quite get over the hump and become a big deal.
Yeah, well, that was such a great movie. And if actually last Halloween, and I believe we had Ryan Terry on for that one, I think my choice, horror comedies, it was Tucker and Dale vs. Evil. So watch that movie if you haven't seen it. Seriously, even though Halloween's over, it doesn't matter. But they are trapped in a horror movie with teens going to the cabin for a weekend, and they are the killers and don't know it. It's just absolutely hilarious.
Yeah.
So this movie does a lot of that stuff where things are happening in the background and the main characters don't see it. They don't know what's going on, but it's also it's also following along with the whole premise of the film with the distractions and all that, with them being on their phones. What's funny and ironic is that they turn their phones off. They record their little message, like, together saying that they're signing off. Don't try to contact us. If you email us, it doesn't matter. And they turn their phones off. and then they try to connect with nature, but while they're connecting with nature, they're not seeing all the stuff going around them. Right. So I found it very funny and ironic that it happened in that.
Well, it's also funny because it's like they like the idea of connecting with nature, but they don't actually like nature. And like,
no.
And it's funny because it's like I related to this guy quite a bit because, like, with the exception of the hipster aspect, like,
yeah.
Like I'm this guy. Like, I don't want to – but except I don't – I know that I don't want to be a part of nature, right? Like,
right.
I like being – I'm very indoorsy. And yeah. So I like I'm totally cool with that. But some people, like, they really struggle with that because they feel like, well, you're better if you're this other thing. And I have also thought at various points in my life, man, if society ever collapses, I am six kinds of screwed. I have no real skills or talents that will serve any purpose in that brave new world. I will be as good as dead.
So they go to the cabin, and I mean, this movie is, like we mentioned earlier, it's a very quirky, funny little indie comedy. Sue ends up, when they get there, she has a journal and she has written lists from the internet on right. it. So, like, just he's, little things like
that. And he's appalled by this. He's, you know, I love when, the line where he's just like, well, you brought the internet with you.
Yeah.
Like, you just wrote it down.
So little things like that to where they're disconnecting, but she's like still trying to find crutches. And as basic as that sounds, but they're like internet lists that she hand wrote. She's like, I hand wrote them all. So that doesn't count. But they get to this cabin and they're trying to connect. But like I said, things are happening all around in the background. So when they're on the way to the cabin, I think you see the alien spaceships like
right.
crashing down to the earth. When you get there, they go out to a lake and she's like got this meditation technique or something. And she's like, just close your eyes and connect with nature. And then in the background, is it Rafe? Or is it another random?
It's a different. It's a random guy. Rafe
okay.
shows up later, a little later.
Yeah, because I knew he was like dead. I didn't know if maybe he was supposed to be getting attacked, and then you see him like limping later. You know, to
yeah,
because
this guy didn't have a beard. He had like white hair, and was.
And I think you see two different people talking to him in the cabin, right? Like he's hallucinating or seeing
yeah.
some, and it's probably the other guy. Then you just see it in the background. It's kind of hard to make it out, but so this guy's getting attacked, and you don't know what it is if it's. You know, it looked to me like he's getting shot with an arrow or something. You know,
yeah.
you just don't see how he's dying, but he's like, oh, and you hear a sound effect and he kind of falls over as they're meditating and they're hearing this stuff and just making funny little comments like, oh, just listen to the nature. And then it's
yeah.
like this guy getting killed and random noises in there. And so, you know, he's had enough with that crap and he ends up jumping into the lake and they end up going back to the cabin. And here is where we see basically a tribble.
Yeah.
I'm like, when you read the show shares, Ralph Tribble, and we used to comment on the Trouble with Tribbles episode of Star Trek, but this looks like basically a giant tribble. It's
yeah.
just this ball.
They call it a poof.
Yeah,
which,
a poof.
which probably prevents this movie from being distributed in the United Kingdom.
Oh, but I like the fact that they name it a poof, P-O-U-F-F-E. They name it this thing, and there's no comments on it. It never changes. It's never really referred to why they named it that way. I just
poofy.
Love that they're like, right. But I just love that they call it a poof, and then the whole
yeah.
movie, it's like, oh, it's a poof. Oh, it's a, you know, it,
yeah.
Those type of things in these indie films, like, that's my type of humor. Just
yeah.
the little offhanded comments that become a thing and never get focused on or explained, but it just was funny. So they call it, like, an ottoman at one point. Like, they're like, just the way they describe this
the first
thing.
Time they see one, they just, it's in the cabin, and they just think it's part of the weird decor yeah. of this place.
Yeah.
And then
they're
they
like,
realize.
Was that poof here earlier?
Yeah.
I don't know, but maybe. I don't know.
And then they realize that, like, when they come back, it's in a different spot or it's gone. And they're
yeah.
just like, whoa.
Well, the funny thing is that the viewer realizes it first and the camera pans onto it when he goes outside. So they get into an argument. They're in the shower and he's like, you know, just little, again, believable couple things. Like, she's pouring soaps into containers and then he's in the shower trying to figure out which is which. And
yeah.
he's like, they're not labeled.
She's labeled none of them. But
yeah.
she knows, like, well, green is this
they're
and red is this. And he's just like, I, like, I'm a guy. I use one thing on my hair. I don't
right.
know.
Right. And which means. Is funny is also the miscommunications and relationships. Like to her, she's like, well, yeah, the green one's body wash, the yellow one's shampoo, whatever. And you just, in your brain, you think, well, I know this. You know, it's nothing malicious, yeah. but in relationships, you kind of assume things or you think one way and you forget or don't realize that the other person can't read your mind or they won't just know this other thing. Yeah. And so he gets frustrated and then they get into an argument and she ends up basically calling him out. I mean, she's like, what are we doing with our lives? And by the time my mother was this age, she's had three children and like, what do you have? What are you doing? And she really, I mean, she's not trying to, but it comes off as like very mean, right? She's not, I don't think she was maliciously trying to attack him.
I think
but
she's just kind of having an existential crisis and she's questioning the choices that they've made, but that also comes across as she's questioning the choices that he's made.
Exactly. Like she's scared. She's worried for them, herself and them. And so it comes off as very mean, but it's like a very realistic concern. And he's like, I've got crypto, I've got 36 whatever. And then she's yeah. like, cryptos doesn't count. And what are you doing? And so he gets angry after they have this heated argument, and he basically tries to prove to her and himself that like he can do things. And yeah. so this is when he goes outside and the camera pans, you know, he doesn't notice it, but the poof was sitting there, and when he walks by it's gone. And he goes outside and there's this very funny moment where she's like near a window and she's looking at what he's doing, and he's like going to chop the wood, but he's barely yeah. gotten through the wood, and then he's like hitting the axe and the wood onto the stump to
yeah,
try
like
to break.
If you've never chopped wood and you've only seen people chop wood in TV shows, like you think you just swing an axe and it just goes through the wood, and it's like that. If you're Chris Evans, it works, but
yeah.
for the rest of us, that's
I was gonna say, it's
especially
happening.
if you've never done it before, because you've got to hit it. You not only do you have to be strong, you have to hit it the exact right spot, and like. This guy ain't going to do that.
No, it's like people probably remember that. It was like, think half an Avengers movie when they were at Hawkeye's cabin. Where was yes. Hawkeye? Oh, he's chopping wood at his cabin. But yeah, so it's just comical because this guy, as Tom said, he doesn't have skills, and he says it. Like when they talk yeah. later, he's like, I don't have these skills. I can't do plumbing and manly this, that, and the other. Like, I don't know what to do or offer. But anyway, while he's outside, she decides to cheat on their little agreement, and she goes to check her phone because this, you know, the phones are off, they're both turned off, but of course they brought them, which is like the ultimate temptation. I mean, of yeah. course they're getting who it would be hard this day and age. I mean, totally. They're being pretty good, but after a day or almost a full day, like, you know, let's check it. And so she turns it on, she's getting all these alerts, and I thought the mother was really funny the way that she was written. So her mother is like kind of the typical nagging mother, but she's also like, they keep like she's saying things that sound crazy, and the daughter's like, I thought it was just she was talking a bunch of Fox News nonsense.
Yeah, because she's like oh, the aliens are attacking, yeah. and she doesn't say it quite that way, but like, there's giant rats, but they're not really rats, and they're killing yes. us all. And she's like, they're talking about it on Fox and Friends. And she's like, oh, yeah. well, then that must be bull.
Yeah, I liked that through line. I thought it was very funny because, of course, you know, there have been some pretty crazy stories that have come out of those right-wing outlets and the Alex Jones and some of the Fox yeah. News stuff. And so I thought it was funny that was that through joke that the mother starts off talking about rats in New York. Like, have you seen these rats? They're not really rats. And yeah, so she ends up admitting that she listened to the phone call and says that these things are attacking, and they basically eventually figure out that it's the poof. Like they yeah. narrow it down, like, oh, it must be this thing. And they notice that their alcohol, oh, first his bread making yeast or whatever is drained, and so then the alcohol is gone, and she remembers that her mother on one of her messages said that they're eating ethanol.
Yeah, so, they're like ethanol, yeah.
So that's an ingredient in both of those things, and which also ends up coming into play that they can't drive their car because it takes that ethanol mixture of gasoline. I mean, right? It's not like it runs on full ethanol. It's like a mixture, right? It's like
yeah,
less
I'm,
gas.
I'm again, because that's more of a manly thing, how cars work. I can't help you too much, but I think like,
E85 or whatever, right?
Yeah, like I thought that's an E85 thing that it has ethanol that the other ones, like a regular car, a traditional car, the gasoline, I didn't think it had ethanol in it, but I'm honestly not sure.
I think they use a certain percentage. I mean, I know that this isn't really super relevant to the discussion, yeah, other than if we want to figure out what this thing's eating. But what gas pumps used to have an E85 thing,
right,
and I think they realized
it's still out there.
Is, yeah. Okay, but it's very rare. It, like, they did it, and then I think they realized that most cars didn't take it, and especially with electric cars, like, that never really caught on. They kind of went from, if you're going to be efficient, like, let's go to...
Okay, here we go. Most of the gasoline sold in the United States contains some ethanol.
Yeah.
E15 gasoline is with 15% ethanol content. E85 is fuel that contains 85%. But the ethanol,
oh, it's 85.
Okay. Yeah, and the ethanol content of most of the motor gasoline sold in the United States does not exceed 10% by volume, but it does have it in there.
Okay, so. Yeah, because when you go to the gas pump, I mean, I don't know if you pump gas, Tom, if that falls into the...
Well, I don't live in New Jersey. I have to pump gas here. They don't have full service. You know, in New Jersey, it's against the law to pump your own gas.
They still have that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. So, that's jobs, right? I mean,
yeah. But like, so, but I do know the E85, it's a little cheaper, but from what I understand, it's a little cheaper, but you get less miles per gallon. So it's kind of a wash. And then it's largely subsidized by the federal government because of the corn subsidies. Yeah. And so like they're basically paying corn guys to make all this extra corn so they can turn it into ethanol. And but there aren't too many cars that have E85 that are E85 capable. And so it can be difficult to find an E85 station. Like, you know, you normally got to get more in the outskirts of an area to find an E85.
Right, exactly. And so I remember when that was a big thing, but I think they kind of ditched it for the electric stuff. And, you know, that's
As electric cars and the hybrid cars reach more critical mass, I think the ethanol, the E85 stuff just kind of seemed pointless, you know?
Yeah, so, but I guess because they're like, you know, kind of hippie-ish and new age and whatever, that they have an E85 car, which
I don't know that they do. I think
really?
Just because this, I mean, just what we read says even regular gas is 10, you know, has about 10% ethanol in it. Especially because, like, later when they find a car that works, we'll get to it, when that lady wants the car, she's like, it's diesel, right? And so, I don't think she'd... Because, I mean, honestly, I wouldn't assume a car was E85, right? Like, they wouldn't affect 95% of the automobiles in America if it had
that's
to be 85.
True. Okay, so they just want that ingredient in
they
there.
Just want ethanol. And so that this is my interpretation of that. And that's why when they find this old car, it's a diesel car, and that's why it still had gas in it, because diesel presumably does not have ethanol in it.
Gotcha. Okay. So they figure it out, and so these things eat ethanol. So anything with that, is a goner, which is basically all the vehicles except for the one that they find later. But they turn on, they decide that they're going to go turn on their phones. They grab, like, I don't know, fireplace pokers or whatever. You know, they're grabbing all these random things to try to attack this poof that they have no idea what it does, but they know that it's this crazy alien thing that they're getting these messages about. And I like that they when they turn on the phone, they get these calls from people, and they're like they're from the mother, and then they're from some of their friends, and they're like, these things are attacking, like, we're all going to go meet up at the stadium. And then the next message is, oh, nope, the stadium's gone.
Yeah, the stadium's collapsed.
I'm like, oh, my God. It's so funny, and it totally works with the constraints of this budget, like you said.
Yeah.
They're talking about all this crazy world-ending destruction going on.
And you see none of it.
But they're at a remote cabin just hearing about it on voicemails, which I find is so funny.
The thing that I've never really understood from a plot standpoint, which I thought was, like, something that should have been explored or explained, which is their goal is to leave this cabin. And I'm like, why? Like, why would you leave this cabin? Like, when you hear what's going on everywhere else, you would think, like, you're probably positioned about as good as you could be because you're away from where all the mayhem is occurring.
I think it's just because the poof's there and it keeps showing up, and I think
but
they want to
clearly
get away
there's
from it.
More poofs if you go to a city.
Right, I know, but it's like damned if you do, damned if you don't. Yeah. I mean I see that, but I think they're like, let's get away from it, and hopefully, I mean, they don't think it could be in a car with them or whatever,
right?
So they're just trying to, like, get away. But anyway, there's a lot of funny moments like that. And then another one is their friends are like, yeah, we're going out on the water to ride this out until it's over. So if you're at the dock within the hour, we'll pick you up. And he's like, when was that message? And she's like, 5 o'clock yesterday or whatever. So they're screwed. They're on their own.
He's mad at her because she sat on her phone messages and didn't tell him for like a day. So if she had told him, they might have been able to get there, but now they've missed their window.
So they end up cornering one of these things, and I can't remember if it's before or after, but you end up seeing Rafe at night, either right before this or after this, and they don't see him. But again, it's one of those things happening in the periphery, and he's like, you know, limping outside the window and then falls over and collapses. He's clearly been killed by one of these things. In his message, he said, "I'm on my way to the cabin to ride this thing out. Sorry to crash, but I'll see you soon." So he's dead. And they end up confronting one of these things and they try to corner it. And then this is where you see what it does. So it has this like long tongue.
It's almost like a tongue that shoots, like a tongue / tentacle.
Yeah,
that
yeah,
like, shoots out like for, I mean, it can shoot out like 10 or 15 feet, it looks like.
Yeah.
And then that's how it moves around. It like sticks to it like Spider-Man's web. And but then it can also like just like shoot right through your head.
Like an alien.
Chest. Yeah.
Alien mandible thing. Right.
Right.
Like so. But I really I don't know. So they're very basic creatures. And Tom alluded to this at the beginning. They look like a Tribble from Star Trek. They're just this big, fuzzy round poof ball. I mean that's the only way to describe it. But they make weird little critter sound effects. They just shoot out a tongue and they move, you know, in a very like basic way. They pull themselves around. So there's not much to them, but I liked it. There was something endearing about, you know, like
just how simplistic it was.
Yeah,
they didn't overthink it because you're not really coming to the movie for the aliens.
No, exactly. And so I really liked how simple it was. And you get the gist of it, that these things have landed on Earth. They're attacking. They're, you know, the height of the craziness going on, I mean, or one of the huge things is that stadium collapsed. So you know that this little poof ball is dangerous enough to attack and collapse an entire stadium.
Yeah.
So they mean business, and we see what they can do. So right, we've seen them kind of kill a couple people, not really up close, but then in a second when they get out of the cabin, we're about to see what they can do. But anyway, I really liked how simplistic it was. And so while it doesn't really look threatening, sometimes those are kind of cool, like the deceiving monsters, the ones that don't look scary, but when you see what it can do, it's like, oh crap, that little thing can kill you in an instant.
Yeah.
So they're like, you know, they try to figure out how they can get out. They try to make a go bag and all they have is perishable food. And so they're, you know, they're trying to live fresh. They have like chicken cutlets and
it's all stuff they bought at the farmer's market.
Yeah.
The so locally sourced farmer's market, I'm sure.
Yes. So they're like, you know, oh, we should have brought some cans and stuff. But anyway, so they try to time it and they figure out they can get out in like 26 seconds. So they're doing this whole thing and they're ready to get out of there. So they you know, we've realized the car is not viable, but they go out to a shed. I think it's they see one of the poofs and they have to run to the shed, I think is what happens. Because you see that wide shot of them like running to it.
Yeah, and they get the gun, right?
Oh,
they gun at
that's,
this point.
Well, yeah, but then they lose it. Like that's just a funny little moment where like Rafe calls them and says like my grand that I mean this is a very funny moment, not really plot heavy, but he says my grandpa's gun's in the basement and it's locked in a chest, and so he says it's the same something something penicillin 70, and so they're like, what year was penicillin in use? 1770, and they're trying to guess it. And they're talking and he's like, I can't concentrate, I can't talk while I'm trying to figure this out. And they give up on it. And then later she walks over to the chest and realizes that the hinges are broken off.
Yeah.
So they could have flipped it open from the back the entire, you know, little things like that
again,
that are just quirky, funny little moments. But he's like, I'm going to, you know, see how this thing shoots, you know, and get accustomed to it or whatever. And so he goes to the window and then he takes his shirt off and ties his shirt around his ears to protect them. He's like, you should do it too. And so she just covers her ears. And this thing, this rifle, like the blowback of it shatters the windows. It scares them, you know, and then they're like, and they just cut to like them holding each other. And they're like, yeah, I'm glad we put that gun away. And she's like, you know, they give some statistic like, yeah, I know that we're 11 times more likely to injure each other than an outside invader. You know, just like really goofy statistics that they have offhand. So they're like, yeah, we're not using the gun. But they end up finding this like a Land Rover, this old Land Rover with a huge steering wheel in the barn. And maybe they find it earlier. But either way, like they they see the poof and they run away and they bolt it to the barn and he gets in the driver's seat and he's like, oh crap, it's a manual. I don't know how to drive this.
Yeah, that just was funny. They neither of them know how to drive a stick.
And the funny thing
again, is, I would totally be like, well, we're stuck here. I don't know how to drive a stick.
And then I love this though. This guy, you know, and again, they're both very likable characters and I like this guy. I can relate to him. This isn't anything where I'm like, oh, this guy's a loser and can't do stuff. Like, again, very relatable, likable characters. But he's like, I don't know how to drive this. Can you drive it? And she's like, no, I had a boyfriend in high school one time had me teach it. And he just instantly opens the door and gets to the other side. Like, he doesn't even wait. He's like, oh, that's more than I can do.
Yeah, you're closer than I am.
So she climbs over and, you know, and she's like trying to reverse it out and she's stalling it. And, you know, someone that doesn't know how to drive a manual, that's how they would keep stalling it and all that. So anyway, they get out of the vehicle and they end up like very slowly driving it because she has no idea. And he's like, I think this is the part where you need to shift. So she's like in first gear, just like jerking it a lot. Well, that sounds kind of dirty. She's in first gear. And it's
well,
just
her first boyfriend did teach her.
Touche. So they end up leaving the cabin. The cabin is getting swamped with these things at this point. So he's like, you just go grab the bags, forget the perishables, but grab the other bags of the stuff that we can take with us that are right by the door. She goes to get them. And then he's like, wait. And he's like, poofs on the roof. And just little things like that, funny line readings, you know. And she looks up and they're like all over the roof. There's three or four up there. There's poofs in the yard walking around. And so they're, you know, they're like, we're screwed. And that's definitely why they want to leave the cabin now, because they swamped the whole thing. And so they take off, and then on the road they see a truck coming towards them and they're like, what is that? And then the truck stops in front of them. And you see this little white poof walk up to it, one that we haven't seen before. And these people get out of the car, and the woman that is driving, I think, that got out, she starts shooting at it, doesn't hit it, and then this thing kills her. You don't really see it. It's like from behind. And then the guy gets out of the passenger seat and comes around the front of the car, and this is where you really see, like, this thing, the tongue shoots out at his head, and blood splatters all over the truck.
Yeah.
So it's like,
yeah, it's almost like just getting shot in the head.
Yeah, I mean,
because earlier I thought that's what was happening, was somebody got shot.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. So because like when Rafe collapsed, he had blood on his head, and so these things have like this high impact projectile tongue that will act like a bullet, as Tom said, and it boom, there this blood everywhere. So you've never really seen anything too violent so far in this movie, and so I think when you're at this point, like halfway through, and they punch it up like that, that's another thing I like, where it kind of catches you off guard, like, oh wow, we're actually going to see this thing killing. I thought it was going to be in the background noise. So they're these two are dead. The poof, I think we see it, or it's inferred that it has taken this truck's gasoline, because otherwise they would just get in the truck. So they start driving off on their way, and they hear a baby cry. And this is another really fun interaction.
Which, I mean, it was like, this is a great scene, but I'm also like, could you really hear the baby cry from like 20 feet away in another car with the windows rolled up? Like,
but I have a baby and they are very loud, I will say. They are kind of loud.
But I do like this scene when they're like trying to figure out, like, well, do we go get the baby?
And logic. They're trying to rationalize. Well, he's trying to logic his way out of it. And so, like, she is driving, and of course, she hears the baby and stops. And she's like, there's a baby in the car. What do we do? And the poof's out there still, of course. And he's like, well, maybe we didn't hear it, and we just keep driving. And then you hear it cry again, and she's like, oh, damn it. And, you know, like, they've got to go. I mean, there's no – I don't think they ever really would have left. But he's trying best to –
They were trying to come up with but they both knew that, like, their heart wasn't in it, trying to talk themselves out of going back to get this baby.
Yeah, there's no way. So anyway, they end up going to get the baby, and they get the baby out. And then this isn't where he gets attacked. Is it later?
No, it's later, because, like, this is where
they get carjacked.
They hop in that car, and then the lady is in the bed. There's another lady in the bed of the truck, and she pops up and steals their truck.
Yeah, like she was hiding in these people's truck, and I don't think they even knew. And then as soon as she realizes they've got the diesel, she takes their truck at gunpoint. And then when she drives off, I like it that he's like, I knew we should have grabbed the gun. And then she's like, no, if we grabbed the gun, we would have been shot. And then the car would be stolen.
Yeah, she would have taken our gun and killed us.
Yeah.
Like, who are we kidding?
So now they're on their own.
They're stranded with a baby.
Yeah, they've got a baby. And he looks in the truck and he finds one of those, what do you call those, baby carrier things, you know. And so he's like, score. And so they're walking through the woods. He's got the baby on his chest. And then they end up stopping. I guess they're just stopping to relax or whatever. And they put the baby down and they end up. Oh, they've got the hiking bag and they're going to change the baby. So the baby has gone to the bathroom in the diaper and so it needs a change. And when they're looking through the bag, they find the birth certificate for the baby and they find out that the baby's Jack. So same name as his and they're all like, oh, there's two Jacks.
Fate.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, another one of those things where like, yeah, they're going to keep this baby. I mean, what other choice do they have? But they,
right. You they're going to chuck the baby to the side.
Right.
Like, yeah. Like,
so it gives them that extra attachment to feel a little more close to the baby. But at this point, I was a little bit confused and it was nice. One nice thing about VOD is that you can rewind it, right? So like if you're in the theater, you might miss stuff and it's just like, oh, well, I don't know. Well, ask about it. But I was able to rewind a couple times in this movie to look at like the things happening in the background and those sort of little things, but they just seem to start like tripping. I mean, was there ever an explanation? Did I miss it? They were almost like hallucinating, tripping on.
Yeah. So the poof poofed them when they were in the car.
Oh, so that caused the,
and I think,
trip.
Yeah, I think it was like some sort of like, you know, like gas that caused hallucinations.
Okay. That's right. Because Yeah.
It was difficult to process because I will say that there was like a fairly decent sized gap between when they got poofed and when they started to feel the effects. Although it does, realistically, it would take a little bit for the effects to start. But one would think, like, just based on other drugs that you get hit with, not counting like a pepper gas, it just instantly hurts, you know.
Yeah, okay, but, so that's probably why, because they in the car, because they're like, what, do you smell that? Oh, we got poofed or whatever. And then and then that's back in the car, and at this point they're walking, they're going through the woods, and so I just didn't connect it at the time.
And then in the, when he finds the stuff in the truck, they also had epinephrine pens.
Yeah.
And so, like, as she's about to pass out, she hits them both with the epinephrine, which I guess negates the effects.
I really liked when they were tripping and starting to like, they're kind of like talking nonsense, mumbling and trying to connect with nature. And then the baby ends up crawling away while this is happening.
Yeah, they lose the baby.
But he has a bottle for the baby. Like, it's another one of those really random funny moments where he has this bottle and then all of a sudden he has a huge bottle that he's holding and they cut back to him and he has like 10 mini bottles that fall out of his hands. Like, did you catch all those little funny, like,
yeah, totally.
It was just random. So it shows you that they're totally whacked out on whatever this stuff is. So she saves them with the epinephrine pens and they both pass out and then they wake up, come to, they realize, wait, the baby's gone. And then this is where they run into the poof, that white poof again that finds them.
Yeah.
And he ends up jumping in front of her to save her. And it attaches to the baby carrier. And so at first you don't know really what's going on. But it looks like, okay, maybe it just got caught up in the baby carrier. And then while it's attacking him, she ends up taking a knife and hacking the thing, the tongue. And so when she hacks the tongue, you know, the one of the pieces is like still attached to him. And then the other part kind of rolls back into the poof. And then the thing deflates. And so we find out that these things, the way to kill them is if you sever that tongue, I guess they use it to breathe or whatever, and then they're done for. So we see this thing just like flattened on the ground. And then he, you know, they have this nice moment where she's like, oh, you saved me, you jumped in front of it, and he's like, yeah, it's nothing. And then
he viciously murdered it on my behalf.
But
what I thought was a nice moment, it wasn't the baby carrier that saved him.
I know, right? And the funny thing is that it was the phone, actually.
It was the phone. It hit the phone and it couldn't go through the phone. And so this is kind of it almost feels like a nod to old Westerns. It was kind of a thing you'd see sometimes where it was like they'd give the hero a Bible and then they'd get shot later in the film. And it was like the Bible was in their shirt pocket, like a smaller Bible. And it like, and then it was that caught the,
Oh, yeah. You know, that's such a, I mean, that's
stop the Bible. Yeah.
Obviously, that is a trope that you see over and over and over again, where the person pulls out the thing with a bullet stuck in it. But so that was kind of a nice moment where, what I like about this movie is that clearly I think that the movie and all of us can agree that technology is for society, technology is great. And it also, for social purposes, is very bad as far as communicating, how we interact with one another, the time that we spend together. There's that whole documentary on Netflix, The Social Dilemma, that goes into just how bad it is. And so we all use it, and that's how you find the show, how we communicate. Social media can be great, but it's also taking over our lives. And so I think we can agree that there is a point where it's too much, and this film is obviously doing a commentary on that. But then I also like that in the end, the phone saved them. And so I think that also we're all, the way that I read it is that, you know, maybe we need to cut back on it, but we're never going to get rid of technology. There's no going back. So we need to find a way to live with it and manage it. And technology can be good. It can save you, right? Like it saved him from the poof.
Right.
So technology is good, but you have to wield it carefully. Right. And so I like that the film never feels preachy. I mean, these are two 30 somethings that are like way into technology and it's very relatable in the way that, yes, we do need to disconnect, but the film is never just straight up like, you know, it's never yelling at you, technology bad, you need to all go camp in the woods and hunt and be self-sustaining. Like, it's never that type of film, so don't feel like it's preachy. It's just fun.
No, not at all. It's just it's about striking, having some moderation.
Yeah, exactly. So they end up getting the baby back. They just find him, right? He's sitting.
Yeah, I don't think they do anything spectacular. Like, he just kind of like
sitting under a tree or
wanders
something.
Back. Yeah, they just kind of come across him and they're like, oh, here's the baby.
Oh, and I did forget that while they were tripping, like, they kind of got married by a tree. he's like, this is the Reverend Mr. Tree or whatever. And so they like have this fake wedding ceremony or whatever, which is like a nice moment. And they're kind of regained their whatever spark they needed and all that. So, they turn on their phones. Now, after the phone saves them, they start looking at their phones and they're getting all these notifications. But now, of course, they're distracted because they're back in the being mesmerized by phones. And then this force field starts enveloping them and they're not even noticing it until it's too late. And all of a sudden they're like, we're in a poof force field or whatever. Yeah. It's just, they're like, I don't know. And then they start levitating. Like, they're really zoomed in and all of a sudden you see the background around them. We see it like them going up in the air. And they get higher and higher and higher. And they're just like, are we saved or are we, like, we don't know, right? And and they go all the way up into outer space and this thing has oxygen for them. So it's not like they're dying, but they and the baby are off in outer space and it zooms out and you see like hundreds or thousands of these poof force fields all taking them to a central location. So, I mean, it's left open. Like, we don't know. Are these poofs, like, yes, we saw them killing people, but I don't know. That poof in the cabin never killed them. And so I don't know if you're to read into, like, the poofs only kill people that try to attack them, and it's a defense type thing. Like, those people shot at them. Rafe maybe attacked them. He seemed a little bit more, like, mountain man-ish. Like, he might try to defend himself. These two are harmless, right? They don't have these skills. They never tried to really, you know, kill the poof until they were like the very end when they escaped from the cabin. So, you know, I don't know. How did you read that? Do you think the poofs?
I wasn't sure what to make of it. Like, this was really my only complaint about the movie is just that it kind of like doesn't really resolve. It just sort of stops.
Right. It's one of those that just cuts off. I mean, you see them getting beamed up. There's no resolution. You have to make whatever you know, for the characters. You know,
I think you could go a whole, you could have a whole host of interpretations. Because my first thought was like, now that they have this baby, are they pulling up families? Mm. You know what I mean? And they wanted the, you know, either, you know, study them or repopulate. They want, you know, familial units. At this point, like, we're just writing their screenplay for them. Sure. Like, I don't think they know.
But I mean, if they wanted to kill them, they'd be dead, right? They wouldn't take them up to their planet to just to kill them there. So I'm thinking,
I took it as like they're killing some and keeping some, and I don't know if there's like a whole lot of rhyme or reason even to it, because you never see anybody else's pod, not enough to know if they're in it.
I just,
you
know? The only thing that I took, unless they just had a good poof at the cabin, that poof had tons of opportunities to kill them.
Right.
Tons of opportunities.
Sure.
And we saw poofs killing the random fisherman guy or whatever he was, and then we saw them kill Rafe. We saw them kill the people that shot at them. So we don't know about the first two, but the couple that shot at them clearly was dangerous. But that poof, the original one in the cabin, they walked past it a ton of times. They were right next to it. It didn't even run away until they started kind of yelling and getting scared.
Until they figured out what it was.
Yeah. So I'm thinking that this thing, when it kills, is doing it defensively. And then it is taking people up for whatever reason, we don't know. So, you know, I don't know what would happen, and none of us do, but I don't think the poofs are just killers. I think that it knew that those two were good, and
but
not
at this point, though, they did kill one. It didn't take them until after they killed one.
Yeah, but I don't think they knew, you know, because that one was just out in the middle of the woods. I think if they had known they killed a poof, they probably wouldn't have decided to take them, would be my guess. But yeah, I mean, that's how it ends. I really liked it. The ending was the only thing for me. Like, I'm not one of those people that likes the total leave it up to your interpretations type ending. Those do kind of bother me when they just cut off. I'm not saying, like, if there's a movie like Inception or one of those that has a lot of thought behind it, sometimes it can be kind of fun to theorize and discuss and all that. But there's a lot building up and a lot of clues you can find. This one doesn't really have a ton of clues, so when they just cut it off like that, it's not as fun to theorize, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so, totally. That's why I was like, at that point, I'm writing their screenplay.
Yeah,
I don't feel like there's enough here. I don't feel like there's enough here to really suss out any real theory. I think if all of a sudden this movie made $100 million and they were like, let's make a second one, they'd sit down and then they'd ask themselves the questions, what are these poofs doing? what is their goal? Are they evil? Are they just misguided? Are they, like I don't think they know, because honestly, that's in their defense, that's not really the story that they're trying to tell.
No.
It's really more about this couple and how they interact with technology and modern society. But at the same time, when you end your movie on that note, you're going to leave people asking these questions.
Exactly. So that was my only complaint, if you can call it a complaint, because it's a pretty quick, like, it's like a hour, 30-minute movie.
It's like 90 minutes.
It's,
yeah, totally.
It's very fun. It's endearing. The characters are likable. It's quirky. It's funny. I really enjoyed the ride the whole way. So if you're going to call it a complaint, that was my only issue, was the ending was it kept me asking questions that I don't think we could possibly get the answers to. But in the end, it didn't really matter because they went on this journey. I think it said what it wanted to say. And I thought it was really fun. I really liked it. These movies that are original and don't go down the tropes, I mean, we've said it before and we'll keep saying it, but with all the remakes and reboots and they keep going to the well, and we see a lot of movies. And so when you watch a lot of them, it happens where you're like, seen this, been there, I've seen something like this. And I don't know. I mean, this one seemed pretty original. I mean, yeah, we've seen monster movies and we've seen alien movies, but we've never really seen them like this where, I think because it's such a modern premise with technology that was really the crux of the movie, was about the intimate relationship and how they deal with technology. And then the monsters were there, but that was just a reason to get them to move around and run away,
right?
And some funny moments. It was a sweet, cute little movie.
I enjoyed it overall. I wish it would have stuck the landing a little better.
Yeah.
It would have been easier to rave about it if it had done that. I honestly, looked it up because I was like, is this a setup for a TV show? Like, is this a backdoor pilot and there's going to be a TV show that then goes on with what happens once they've been sucked up to space? And it does not appear to be the case.
That was,
Yeah, but it's available on VOD, and you can rent it for like $6.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, this is, with being on the indie side, it's not a lot of those movies that are like the big ones that are theater at home are $20 and they're $20 rentals. This one's a $6 rental and a $15 to own. I'm sure in the next few weeks it will go on sale for $10 to own or whatnot. You know, this is one of those movies that will be reasonably priced. But if you want to check it out, $6, it's a real easy, fun watch. You know, what this kind of reminded me of when I think about it is, did you ever see Safety Not Guaranteed?
I thought the same thing. It reminded me of that. It also reminded me of a movie from about 20 years ago with Marissa Tomei and Vincent D'Onofrio. I talk about it every once in a while called Happy Accidents.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen it, but I remember.
Oh, you should see it. It's he's a guy who claims to be from the future. Hmm. He might or might not be from the future. Okay. So it's a time travel movie, but like this, it's a very low-budget time travel movie. It's a little bit better because Marissa Tomei and Vincent D'Onofrio were something of names, you know, like, sure. So they weren't completely inexpensive, but and it's basically like these two are falling in love and she's trying to figure out, like, is this dude crazy or is he right?
Right.
And it's a really good movie. It was just on IFC one day and I was just like, well, that's an interesting premise. And I like totally got sucked in and it's absolutely worth watching.
Awesome. Yeah. And if you haven't seen Safety Not Guaranteed, that was the first time that I saw what's her face. I want to call
Aubrey
her
Plaza.
Aubrey Plaza. Yeah. I wanted to call her April Ludgate or whatever from Parks and Rec. Aubrey Plaza, that was the first time I ever saw her. It's her and Mark Duplass, and Mark Duplass plays he says he's a time traveler or he can time, you know, and she's trying to figure out, is this guy crazy? And so, but it's another one of those quirky little indie movies that is very well written. Those two are really funny. So even though the premise is not the same with this is technology and that one is time travel, it's in the same budgetary and indie writing and indie film type of movie making. Yeah. So that was directed by Colin Trevorrow, who directed Jurassic World. So that was, you know, when the big studios kind of following the Marvel method were pulling up the indie superstars to come make the big movies. So, you know, that movie,
they were moneyballing it. They were like, we've got the IP, that'll do the heavy lifting. We'll moneyball it on the director and somebody like, you know, that's got some vision. And
they won't take 10% of the back end. Right?
Totally, yeah.
I mean, that's what the protection's for, is the Hitchcock thing we talked about last week.
Yeah.
You know, totally, you get a great director like Hitchcock, and he, you know, he says, well, you know, you can pay me this up front, or if you don't think this movie will do well, just give me 10% if you're not that worried about it. And then he makes $100 million in modern money. It's like,
yeah.
So you hire Colin Trevorrow, and he wants to make a Jurassic World movie. All he's done is this little indie darling movie. Like, hell yeah, he'll do it for free. It doesn't matter. Like, he's going to be a huge director after this. Okay. And then the movie makes $1 billion, and it's like, oh.
But he still made a ton of money doing it.
You know what I mean? Like,
it's not like they paid him $40,000 to make the movie. Like, I'm sure he still made, you know, in the six figures to make the movie.
No, I'm sure he made a decent upfront, but he's not demanding a piece of it, though.
Right. It's not like if they brought in Spielberg to direct a Jurassic Park movie, he's going to be like, well, I'm Spielberg, and that's a different. Yeah. Absolutely.
Exactly.
But you see, and I kind of like that Hollywood's been doing that, pulling up the. They've been, you know, I always say they were moneyballing it, and it honestly, it seems like it works more often than it doesn't, unless you hire Josh Trank. but honestly, like, more often than not, like, it has panned out. You know,
because here's the thing. You've got a lot of fresh, hungry filmmakers out there that have grown up watching movies. I mean, like we do. I mean, we're not out there, you know, trying to direct big Hollywood movies or anything, but these people love movies like we do. They've studied them. They've watched and talked about them extensively, and they have the ambition and drive to be filmmakers. And so they're going to use all these examples and all the things they've learned from these master filmmakers, but then they're also younger and they have a fresh eye and they know how to use technology. And so you're going to get the innovation, but also, you know, the really good ones that have studied expert filmmakers are going to bring all that great artistic stuff. Like Rian Johnson's another one. I know that he's been around, but you know, when you see Rian Johnson make a movie like Star Wars, he's putting in references to old movies and camera shots and things. So you get,
but he also has a deep and abiding passion for the source material.
Yeah, you're going to get these directors they have this artistic vision and they're going to want to make these great, you know, artistic movies, but they also can do it efficiently. They are not scared of technology, which there's a few out there, obviously James Cameron and others that are like not scared of it. But, you know, some of the older guys, they're like, I'm only going to film on film. That's expensive. Right. And I'm only going to do this, that, and the, you know, I mean, when you get Scorsese and he says, yeah, I mean, I'll do it, but it's $200 million. It's not affordable, especially in this day. Like, I don't know that Scorsese thing. If it's not with streaming, like Apple got that one, I guess. And then Netflix has some big ones, but if it's not for streaming, who seems to have these unlimited coffers, studios, I just don't think are going to be making, you know, non-Marvel, non-superhero big budget movies. It's going to be, you know, these indie ones, and it's going to be mid tier. And
yeah, it's a weird time.
Yeah,
in a lot of ways. So
yeah,
but well, I guess that's it for this one. I guess there's no need to go around the table. Kevin, where can they find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Kevin R. Brackett,
and you can find me on Twitter at Roger Kubert, or on Facebook at facebook.com/Tom O'Keefe. You can find the show online facebook.com/Real Spoilers. While you're there, like the page, join the group. Also, don't forget our Patreon, patreon.com/Real Spoilers. Where for $5 a month, you get all sorts of bonus content and you help us out. So that's it for this one. No idea what we're doing next week, but we'll figure something out. And Joe's child should be over her candy poisoning by then.
Put that candy on the top shelf.
She OD'd on candy. She did not have poison candy. And honestly, he says that she doesn't think that, he doesn't think that is what happened, but we like to tease him. Oh. So anyway, that's it for this one. Thanks for tuning in. And until next time, Sam claims to be from 2470.
Get ready for a spoiler. Won't say it twice, cause we already warned you. Better watch out.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.